Before we start this episode of CFD's Podcast for Good, let's give a little shout out to our presenting sponsor, WSECU. WSECU has been a part of the community since 1957 and has been supporting the CFD in a big way since 2011. Thanks to them, we were able to bring you spectacular events and promotions like the Masquerade Ball, Golf for Veterans Tournament, and our incredible First Week to Give, which has been responsible for raising tens of thousands of dollars in donations to charities throughout our community. For more on how WSECU serves charities throughout our community, visit www.wsecu.org/community. And of course, visit our website to find out more about our incredible partnership with WSECU. And now, here's the show.
So being fun. It's good to be fun. I like being fun. You want to be fun? Let's be fun at work.
Okay, that's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
What do you mean?
You're a weirdo.
Well, I do what I can. And I do what I want.
Yes, you do.
So.
All right. Are you ready for the Thanksgiving break?
Wow. Yeah.
Look at the enthusiasm for Thanksgiving.
I know.
Wow. Like, you know, it's one of my favorite holidays of the year.
Because you get to eat?
Yeah.
I know. But I'm tasked this year, my job.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. My job is to come up with a new side dish.
Uh-oh.
Right?
Yeah.
So I got to thrill everybody.
Uh-huh.
And then make a dessert. So that's my job this year.
Okay.
I can do this.
Yeah.
I got no problem with it. Yeah. But it's one of those things where I'm just like, I know because procrastination has seeped into my life.
Yeah.
I will wait until the last minute to figure out what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And then kind of be like, nah.
You should be like, I have a side dish. Beer.
My brother has beverages, so I can't steal his glory. Yeah.
Dang it.
I know.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very special episode of Podcast for Good.
I like that. That's a radio announcer voice.
It's like the after school special, like on a very special episode of Podcast for Good.
Timmy falls down a well.
That's right.
Yeah.
This is a special episode because it's not airing on the Fridays we usually do it, number one.
Fact.
And number two, it is about Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is really, you know, kind of a nice time for families to always get together and have a good time. And it is one of my personal favorite holidays to celebrate. Yes, the food is king. I love food. but I also like when families get together and they talk to each other and they actually love each other that day.
I like that you said it like that. I'm like, wait a minute, what? Who is he talking about?
People put things aside and they just come together and have a good time.
Put down your phone.
That's correct. Put
Do
down
it.
Your phone.
Do right? it.
Just have a good time.
Yeah.
The Lions are on TV. Have a good time.
They're adorable.
Yes, they are. My name is Philip Kerrigan. I am the program manager of the Washington State Combined Fund Drive, and this is
Heather Lucas, the fiscal and policy coordinator for the Washington State Combined Fund Drive.
That is correct. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you.
So what we are going to talk about today as a special Thanksgiving episode is hunger, because it seems like right around this time period, everyone starts to think, oh yeah, I have stuff and other people don't.
Yeah.
Statistically, October, November, and December are the highest months for folks to give to charity. It is one of the main reasons why the Combined Fund Drive's annual giving campaign runs during this time, and why other campaigns kind of did the same thing. And so this is really a time for us to come together and think about different ways we can help other people. We had a very, very interesting conversation with Srijan Chakraborty. I got that name right.
Yeah, you did.
The executive director of the Hunger Intervention Program, serving really North Seattle and some of Seattle.
Yeah.
Hunger, of course, is a big time issue in all the state of Washington, but in Seattle, it's a little bit tougher. Actually,
yeah, drastic need.
Yeah. He also mentioned that he serves lots of immigrant communities, two job communities, English as a second language communities. So
and seniors too.
And seniors.
Seniors
as well.
Get left out.
They
a lot.
Sure do. Yeah. They sure do. It's really amazing.
Yeah.
And so it was really interesting conversation about the sort of really just a ton of different stuff that they do. Mm-hmm. So it was a pretty good conversation. Before we dive into that one, though, this is going to be my favorite.
This is going to be your favorite question.
Oh, period. It's my favorite one. So why don't you hit me with the question of the podcast?
Well, Philip Kerrigan, since you are a big fan of food.
Yes, obviously.
What is your favorite Thanksgiving food?
So
you can say more than one. I know you have a litany.
I have more than one.
Yeah.
I mean, are we talking? So
you can say this one I prefer over.
Okay. So move turkey out of the way, because to me, actually, the turkey, this is going to maybe a controversial statement.
Okay,
To me, the turkey is just the vehicle for all the rest of your sides.
Okay.
Right? It's just the,
it's
just
like the nacho chip you dip in everything?
That's correct. Okay. I mean, it's there. It has to be there.
I love nachos.
That's my favorite, just food.
Fact.
The turkey is really just, it has to be on the plate.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're just having a plate full of sides. So for me, turkey's, you know, just, it's just like a.
But if you treat it like it's a tool
to. Yes, and then all of a sudden it becomes this other party in your mouth. You know what I'm saying? So it's an engine.
It's kind of a side that way.
That's right. Yeah. So it's a utilitarian vehicle to the rest of your.
It's the SUV of Thanksgiving.
Correct. To the rest of your sexy Ferrari side dishes.
Nice.
So for me, a good stuffing is high up there.
Okay.
Very high up there. Good stuffing. Take out the apples. I don't want to have anything to do with apples in my stuffing. I know that people put them in there. Another controversial statement I'm saying right here. I'm not an apple guy in my stuffing.
All right.
All right.
You want it to be savory.
I want it to be savory. I don't need a sweet stuffing. I want a savory stuffing.
Okay.
Okay. Second one for me is a, so this is a very, very, like, unique dish to just to my mother, or for those of you listening from the Bavaria area.
Nice.
My mother's German, and so she makes these potato dumplings. They're called Klöße. That's what they're called in Nürnberg, where she's originally from.
Yeah.
And they're really just like, so it takes an odd bit of preparation. You got to go, you boil half the potatoes, then you you shred them, and then you combine them with a shredded raw potato, and then you put it back in the boiling water, and it creates this delightful texture for a potato.
Okay.
Put some gravy on that.
Do you make it into balls or?
Yeah, it's like a giant, like
a giant ball.
My grandma used to make them like softball size.
Nice.
Yeah, and like you would just be like, oh my god, I you think to yourself when you're 12, you can eat like four of those, and you get through one, and you're like, I'm done. So that though is my favorite, but that's more like a regional targeted dish. So I would go stuffing.
Yeah.
For sure. I like to bring in a little bit of the sweet with the yam marshmallow situation.
Okay.
Fan of that.
Okay.
Fan of that. I'm not a cranberry guy, so you can get that out of there.
Oh, that's too bad.
I know. I'm sorry, everybody.
Missing out.
I know. Everybody says it.
I don't like the sweet cranberry stuff. Like tart. And, like, you get a little sweetness in there. Mm-hmm, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But, not too much.
Oh, this is a big question, though.
Don't dump 3 gallons of sugar on it.
Big question.
Yeah.
Are you a canned cranberry person, or are you a real cranberry person? Because there are people who like the canned one where you slice it up more than they like the real stuff.
I can eat both with no problem.
Okay.
But when it comes to actual, like, I'm making a dish with cranberries, I'm using cranberries, man. Okay. Like, we're going real here.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's mine. What about you?
So, also slightly regional. I think this is a Midwestern thing.
Okay.
Because my mom's from Illinois.
Yeah.
So am I. So...
I was also born there.
Hello. I was born and I exist.
It was very natural the way you said that.
So it's this thing that it's called scalloped corn.
Oh.
Okay. So essentially it's just creamed corn and then you add stuff to it. But crackers is a big deal.
Okay.
So like there's a very, very Midwestern thing. Add you know, some kind of carb to your dish.
Yep.
Right.
Yep,
and then suddenly you've got a casserole.
Yes.
But yeah, it's just like salting crackers and corn and some spices, and you cream it up a little and you bake it, and it's just the top gets all like crunchy and then it's soft and it's delicious.
God bless the heartland.
I know.
Let me
tell
you something. They always mix like 8 ingredients together. And then, like, bake it.
Yeah.
And then, like, you got something delicious.
Exactly. And you're like, why? Why did you think to do that?
Yeah. One of my friends is from Iowa, and his mom used to make this, like, chili cheese, like something, crackers on top, put it in the oven. And you were like, oh, my God, why haven't I ever thought about combining 5 of these together?
Yeah. You wouldn't think.
Right?
Who thinks about that?
Damn it, they're really good at
they're
that.
They're really good at
they're
that.
Really good at that. Yeah. Yeah. So we're going with a regional favorite. What about like a well-known favorite? What of the well-known dishes?
I would say, yeah, I mean, like, I can dig some stuffing. I mean, I grew up on, more than anything, the box stuffing, like the stovetop.
Yeah, stovetop.
Right?
Well, hey, look, don't hang on stovetop.
No, I don't. Stovetop's definitely
great.
But, like, in the past couple of years, because it's like, hey, we're all adults. We should try to make something out of actual food.
Yeah.
And so I've attempted, you know, stuffings variations. Yeah. And I did one that had apricots in it that my brother dug because it was all savory and it had some like dried apricots
look at
in
you.
It. I know.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So one of my brothers was like, yes, do that again. I don't remember what recipe it was.
Uh-huh.
So sorry.
Never happened.
Never going to have it again.
It was like Haley's Comet.
Exactly. Shh, there it goes. Say goodbye. But, I find that sweet potatoes, but not like the whole marshmallow business. Like if you do sweet potatoes,
just sweet
like,
potatoes.
Yeah, slice them up, fry them up kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You have a little butter, a little sweetness, and cinnamon.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Yeah, wow. I'm ready for Thanksgiving now.
Yeah.
I want food.
Did we say potatoes enough?
I think potatoes. We did. Well, I mean, look. Potatoes are what they are.
I know.
They're like a beautiful food.
Well, and for anybody who's listened before, they know that we love potatoes.
We do love potatoes. Oh, we had a whole potato hour.
Potato corner with Philip and Heather.
Yes. So I'm going to do this one more. I'm going to do this again, and you people aren't going to do it. I'm just going to do it. You can actually hit us up on Twitter at @WaStateCFD and tell us your favorite Thanksgiving food. For crying out loud, we haven't got a single person to respond to this.
I like it. You people.
You people who listen to us, just respond once on Twitter.
Landon.
Yeah, Landon. I know you have a Twitter, Landon. I know you have a Twitter page.
Yeah.
I know he does. You know what? What else? I bet you Kaylin does.
Yeah.
We're going to call you out. New listener to the pod, Kaylin, you should just hit us up on Wall State CFT and tell us.
Yeah.
Hashtag Thanksgiving foodie.
Ooh, Thanksgiving foodie.
Foodie, right? Yeah. See how I did that?
I did.
We don't have to actually do that, Jerica. It's fine.
Write that down.
Write that down, Jerica. All right, so without further ado, now that we've talked your ear off about the beauty that is Thanksgiving and its food.
And potatoes.
And potatoes. We're going to go into the interview with Srijan Chakraborty from the Hunger Intervention Program. Here is Srijan. All right, ladies and gentlemen, so we are here joined by Srijan Chakraborty, the Executive Director of Hunger Intervention Program. Srijan, thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you.
So first and foremost, let's get the easy question out of the way. Can you give us a little history of the Hunger Intervention Program and what you do for the community?
Sure. In terms of history, our roots go back to the 1990s, when our founders, Linda Berger and Rhoda Morrow, they saw a need that people needed healthy food, especially in the downtown Seattle area.
Right.
There would be a lot of people who are experiencing homelessness on the streets and didn't have a consistent access to healthy food.
Mm-hmm.
So they would make a bunch of meals, and like healthy food was always one of the things that drove them. Mm-hmm. So they always wanted to make sure it is not just any food, but healthy food.
Right.
So they would pack a good lunch, and then they will go downtown and distribute food in the downtown Seattle. So that's how it started as a volunteer-run organization, or not even an organization at that time. And that continued for a long time through various ups and downs, through different partnerships. And in 2008, we moved into the Downtown Emergency Services Center, DESC. And we were serving breakfast there 7 days a week for about 2 years. So from 2008 to about 2010, we served in Downtown Emergency Services Shelter. And 2008 is also when we officially registered as a nonprofit. So actually, this is our 10-year anniversary.
Very nice.
And then starting from 2011, 12, a lot of our focus started to, we started to focus on the north end of Seattle because we saw a lot of need in this area, mm-hmm. and there are other programs that were serving the downtown population.
Okay.
So we moved up into North Seattle, and since then, a lot of our programs have, current programs have grown since then, mm-hmm. which include, we have a meal program for seniors, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and we have, we provide backpack weekend food for children in partnership with 9 different schools in this area.
Very nice.
Yeah, we provide after-school snacks, cooking, nutrition, education classes, food justice workshops, awesome. And very recently, the one thing we are very excited about is we started another elder program focusing on East African elders. So it's a meal that's Ethiopian or Eritrean, and then we primarily have people from that region of Africa.
Wow, that's pretty neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So that's a very quick roundup of our programs right now.
Yeah, yeah. So what does food insecurity look like in the area that you serve? So one of the things we have seen a lot is basically certain areas have certain demographics that are especially hit hard by this. What sort of demographics are hit pretty hard by food insecurity in the area you serve?
Right. So this is another very interesting question, especially for the North Seattle area.
Mm-hmm.
The reason because the demographic here has changed significantly since the last census, and we are due for the next census next year.
Yeah.
But the demographic has changed so much that we do not really have, we cannot rely on any of the census or concrete data to tell our stories anymore. Wow. Even in the last four or five years, the population composition have changed drastically. So we have a lot more people of color, people, immigrant and refugee populations, English as a second language population. So there's a lot of people who have moved up. One of the reasons is because of gentrification in downtown Seattle have moved up in this area.
Mm-hmm.
And so the demographic has changed a lot. And so I can't give you any very hard data. We have done some more informal community level survey that tells the story.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's
one thing that has happened is since on paper a lot of the data is still shows maybe the Lake City is not as diverse, or Lake City or North Seattle as diverse or as needing of service.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the Seattle or the city funding have not flowed into the North Seattle, or the services have not followed mm-hmm. the population. So that's one thing that we're struggling with in terms of the need versus the amount of services that are out here.
Yeah, that's really interesting because, number one, it'll make the census results next year pretty interesting about what North Seattle looks
exactly.
like.
Yeah.
It's also really interesting because you say that the services haven't followed the folks up to North Seattle. That seems really troubling for those
a
who are moving.
A lot of the agencies that serve people here are still based in South Seattle. For example, the reason we started the East African meal is there is one meal in the South Seattle in Eastler area, but there's nothing in the north end.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the people from Shoreline, North Seattle, were moving, going all the way to South Seattle just for that meal and the community.
Wow.
So we know there's many agencies in the South Seattle who serve people here, but they don't have offices or they don't have presence in the community.
Wow. Wow. Yeah, hopefully that's something we see change.
Right.
So in the areas like in North Seattle where you guys are working now, have you mm-hmm. seen that people gravitate more towards processed foods as opposed to fresh foods because of availability or cost?
So in terms of, in general, that is true often, and that's for many reasons, not just for like what we call as a food desert area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In fact, there is not as much food desert area here because there are grocery stores, fair bit. It can always improve. The challenge is often that the reason we do the cooking classes and education workshops is often, even if options exist, people either don't have the time. Maybe many of them are doing two jobs and the cooking is the one last thing they don't want to do after they come back in the evening. So that's one challenge. And the other challenge is also just sometimes like education and knowledge of cooking and basic cooking and finding the right food in the grocery store. So so we try to act, we work on both of those aspects.
Wow, yeah, that's also really interesting that it's not necessarily a food desert situation. It's more that people, A, don't have the time or they don't have the education. Like, you know, to be able to cook, the knowledge to be able to cook. That's really interesting.
Just, like, I mean, there are many, many reasons, and there are many, many reasons why people use processed food or they buy fast food. And education is only one small, that's not necessarily the only aspect.
Sure.
Excellent. Excellent.
It is something too. You don't really get any kind of education as somebody growing up. I mean, there aren't really cooking classes that people take anymore.
Right.
Yeah. That's not a thing.
Cooking or even growing food.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Much more. I mean, it's still an urban area, so not many people are connected to how foods grow.
Yeah. That's totally true.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's totally true.
There was an initiative, I'm sure you've heard of, the Healthy People 2020 Objective.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things they want to do is decrease hunger in the country. But
right.
I'm wondering, from your perspective, what kind of steps do you think need to be taken in order to decrease hunger in and food insecurity just in our region?
Right. So that's a broad question. So I would first say that food insecurity or hunger is not necessarily an issue of immediate, like the availability of, the availability of food. So we have enough food to feed everyone. We have the technologies, we have the processes, we have the power, we have the resources. So it's not about that we do not have the food or the knowledge on how to feed people.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. So at the, in some ways, it comes down to the, a lot of it comes down to the economic system. I mean, we have seen the wages have not increased for a really, really long time, stagnated.
Right.
People have only, except like a very few, small percentage who have seen their wages grow exponentially. Everyone else's wages have stagnated.
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely one issue. People cannot afford good food and medical care, and so they often are forced to choose between one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at a very macro level, without solving at some point, without doing more economic changes that make sure people have, people's wages grow with the productivity, hunger is not, cannot be solved for, like, that's one of the root causes of hunger.
Right.
Yeah.
But there are definitely certain things we can do in the meantime. That we know there are some policies and processes that can alleviate hunger while we work on a much more longer and sustainable solution.
Mm-hmm.
And food stamps, which is called food stamps, which is the SNAP, or Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, those are a great help. So that's because we have very good data that shows people who use that program go up from, the, that help them people to move from poverty. And this is kind of a short-term program. That's often people what they need. Is a little help when the times are rough.
Yeah.
So that, and then Washington State has done good job in terms of providing food, like food vouchers for people to use at grocery stores, at farmers markets. Those are great programs to add that extra money to people's, give people in people's hand, and so people can use that flexibly where they're, what they need most.
Yeah.
There is also have been a grocery prescription program or food and fresh food and veggie prescription program, and that has been fairly popular. So as doctors recommend that you get fruits and veggies, and then that voucher can be used at certain places.
Nice.
Cool.
Well, do you
know, they're all great examples of programs that can help immediately.
Yeah.
But we also have to remember that it's still the root causes of hunger is going to be at the economic level.
Yes.
Sure. Well, do you think that the Healthy People 2020 objective is like out of reach, or if it's just not really something that's realistic for our area?
I, frankly, I'll say I don't know enough of it. I know about this, but the initiative, but I do not know the full detail to comment
sure.
on that intelligently.
Yeah, I know they said they wanted to decrease hunger nationwide by 6%. Mm-hmm. And I saw some statistics about hunger in our area being like a 15% of households. So I don't know if that is really overreaching or if that's realistic at all.
It is.
Again,
yeah.
I sincerely believe we have all the resources and the food and the money if we want to do it seriously.
Yeah.
But I do not see our politicians having that political will
sure.
to make this happen at this point.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Sridhar, let me ask you a question about hunger as it relates to kids. So obviously there are a wave of stats out there that talk about, food insecurity amongst children, you know, 1 in 5, don't know where their next meal is coming from. In your experience in North Seattle, especially with maybe some of the more vulnerable populations, like folks who have English as a second language or immigrants, is this something, you experience maybe even more than 1 in 5? I mean, is it worse in these communities, these children, going food insecure on a daily basis, or is it about the same? Do you see the trend line at about 1 in 5?
Yeah. So, the problem with answering that question is I do not have a good hard data to
sure.
stay either way.
Yeah.
We are fairly small agencies and we know about the people we serve,
mm-hmm.
but like 1 in 5 is kind of a data that has to come from like a broader survey
right.
than what we serve. So, yeah, unfortunately, I cannot say, but I would say what I can say is that we do see a good need. We people, when we have our programs, a lot of people sign up, a lot of people in their comments say the same things, that they're going through tough time, maybe
yes.
some medical emergency or someone lost a job, etc. And that's very frequent. It's not, mm-hmm. I wish it was more one-off, but it is very frequent. It's something that we hear very regularly.
Yeah.
So I do see a good need. Unfortunately, I cannot quite truthfully quantify it.
Sure. Well, that is a good segue, though, to talk a little bit about to ask a question that I think I like to ask a lot of the charities that we talk to. There was an article in the Seattle Times back in 2012 that said that hunger has been increasing faster in Washington State than in most states. That leads me to ask you, in your experience, do you think the problem in your sort of like even anecdotally where you currently work, do you think the problem is getting better or do you think the problem is getting worse?
I would say, at least in our area, from our experience, I would say the problem is probably getting worse.
Ah.
We have seen generally increasing number of people in pretty much all of our programs.
Wow.
Who come to access our meals. We have seen the homelessness issue. It's an emergency.
Yes.
We have called it an emergency in the city of Seattle, and it's visibly much more in this area than even a few years back.
Yeah.
And many of them are the people who come to our meal programs.
Sure.
So I, from a very anecdotally, like observationally,
yeah.
I would say that things have not necessarily gone better.
Yeah, yeah. Tragically, that makes sense because, I mean, if you're getting an increase in homelessness year over year in the Seattle
right.
and King area, you're gonna have more folks who are going to need to be served.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. I mean, I would say also the caveat there is that we are also doing more outreach, so we're probably getting more people who didn't know about
right.
the programs before. So.
But I do think
is also there, but at
yeah.
the same time, I do see there is people who needing service.
Yeah, but I do think that is kind of a bit of a silver lining. If you are getting to more people, that means, you know, you are actually helping more people that may
Absolutely.
Not have
yeah.
gotten it before.
Yeah.
yeah.
So let's say someone hears this podcast and they want to start giving to Hunger Intervention Program.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk about what donations do for your organization?
Sure. So donations can. So I know many people like to hear more quantified, like $25 does that.
Sure.
And I can certainly say a few of those that we have done. But I would say, like, for the most part, those numbers also give people often a false sense of how much money is really needed.
Yeah.
Mm. But generally, that's a really again, point. I would say any funding, if we are talking about funding,
yeah,
funding that you provide to Hunger Intervention Program, it will be used for making nutritious meals available to kids, families, seniors, people experiencing homelessness on the streets, and anyone else who needs our services. We do not ask any questions. We believe people experiencing hardship are already going through a lot of difficult times, and we don't feel we need to create any additional barriers. So we don't ask people for any eligibility, anything for them to get our services. Mm-hmm. Anyone yeah. who comes through our doors are welcome to get a healthy meal through our programs.
Excellent.
So basically we can say any funding that you provide or anyone provides to us will be used to make sure people who need a healthy meal will get one.
Awesome.
Funding is the only one way of helping. Obviously, people can help with volunteering. Mm-hmm. People can help with in terms of policy level changes. That's very much important. Apparently, the farm bill has not been passed in the federal level. There is a public charge rule that's out there. There are lots of policies that affect that will significantly increase hunger if we don't address it now.
Mm-hmm.
And people can make a call to their representatives, federal government, etc. So those are all very important things that you can do.
Absolutely. Excellent. Well, that's a good enough answer for me, I think.
I like it.
So do you have any upcoming events or programs you'd like to highlight as we close out?
Sure. I mean, I mentioned earlier that this is our 10-year anniversary.
Yes.
So we are actually doing a 10-year anniversary celebration end of this month.
Awesome.
On 29th, Thursday, 6 p.m. in the Cafe Clutch, Seattle. It's a coffee shop here.
Excellent.
In the area. So that's a big event we are excited about, celebrating our 10-year journey with people in the community and our partners,
yeah,
and all our donors and volunteers.
Yeah, that's awesome. I like that a lot. Cool. Yeah, that'd be great. Srijan, we really want to thank you for coming on during the holiday season, especially around Thanksgiving. It's a time when we think about these things more often than we do the rest of the year. So we really want to thank you for coming on and talking about a really important issue. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so that was Srijan Chakraborty, the executive director of the Hunger Intervention Program. We only had one charity on the pod today, so
yeah.
We're really grateful for him taking the time out of his day to talk about hunger in Seattle, but hunger in North Seattle more specifically.
Yeah.
I thought there were lots of sort of really interesting tidbits in that interview. I really loved when he talked about how hunger is interrelated with a bunch of other things.
Mm-hmm.
And then even how, you know, the farm bill at the national level and certain bills here at the state level really need to be passed in order to lighten the load for folks who are really struggling out there.
Yeah. And like the tie from how much money income your family has, mm-hmm, as to whether or not you're going to be able to access food. Like that's it should be kind of common sense.
Yeah, and I thought it was really interesting because I had never thought about it either this way, was when he talked about, you posed the question about the processed healthy foods and is it an issue? I always thought it was just a matter of like, well, there's canned chili and it costs $1 or this thing costs like $3.
Yeah.
But reality was he was talking about it more through the lens of even if folks were able to go out and get these things, the time
it takes to make the food.
It takes to make the food. And then even like, what do I do with this food?
Yeah.
Right. Like no one's ever taught you. No one's ever shown you how to prepare these sort of things.
Did you have any kind of cooking classes when you were in high school or middle school or anything like that?
Yeah. I was trying to think about that when he was talking about it. I feel like I was at the tail. I feel like I do remember a home ec class of some kind. I feel like it was at the tail end of it, though, like that whole thing. That is gone now.
No, it is. Like, I remember we had an elective we had to take when I was in seventh grade that was in like a home ec class. And then there was another one that was completely optional in high school. And I took it as like a extra credit thing.
Right.
And that was it.
I know. I think it's amazing to me. We could have the whole podcast on how
people don't know how to make food because they just have not been taught.
Well, how public school has decided to go away from all of the things you actually need to learn in life.
Yeah. I'm going to steal your signature. And also the new math. I just want to punch that
math.
Oh my
gosh.
Are you kidding me?
I'm doing that now. Oh. I'm doing that now. I don't even know what's going on.
Why did you have to complicate math?
Right. It was already complicated.
It's a simple, beautiful language. What are you doing?
See, I disagree. It was already too complicated to begin with. Now I feel like a total idiot.
No.
But like stuff like, I definitely like two classes I think should be really ultimately required in school. And the first one is a finance class.
Yeah.
Like, you know, avoid debt.
Yeah.
You know, like, this is how you balance. This is what you get paid. This is what you
this
have to pay
you
in
budget.
Taxes. This is how you budget. And then the second thing is how to prepare your meals.
Yeah.
It seems like two where you're going to do each of those two things every day for the rest of your life.
Fact.
Right?
Yeah.
You're not going to do Algebra 3 every day for the rest of your life until you go get a degree and go into a profession that needs it.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
You're going to do these.
That's a little more specialized.
Yeah. You're going to do these other two things.
Yeah.
Every day, forever.
I would say add on to that a governmental class,
like the civics class.
I was gonna say commandments, but that's not.
Not commandments.
Amendments.
Yes, the commandments would have a whole other debate.
It would be a different debate. Yeah, but like constitutional knowledge, like we don't have a constitutional base. Like, who's your representative, kids?
Absolutely. Well, you know, I mean, we could do a whole podcast on that too.
Fact.
You know, the idea of like, it just seems like we're missing some of the life skills that are required.
Life skills need to be taught.
Yeah. And we're seeing that maybe play out a little bit today
with some
folks who struggle with these sort of everyday things because it's no longer.
Yeah. Broccoli doesn't come from trees. It's not just a small tree.
Right. Yeah. Right. And one of the things too is when you are talking about folks who's a second language is English or who are immigrants. You know, they don't come here and automatically, contrary to popular belief, apparently they don't automatically come here and steal the quote unquote good jobs from people.
Yeah.
They usually are working tough jobs that require two of them in order to make ends meet. The whole time thing is definitely interesting to me. I thought that was a really interesting answer to that question.
Yeah.
I was not seeing that. So you have some factoids.
I do.
For us. I mean, hunger is rife with statistics, know, so I'm sure you found a bunch of stuff on the internet.
I did. And I found something, too. Like, we had talked to Srijan about 2012 article.
Yeah.
So that article was something I hadn't seen before.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah. So it said that Washington hunger increased here. It increased more than it did in other states.
Yeah.
Like, it was bad. So from about 2008 to the end of 2011, the number of hungry families in Washington grew from about 88,000 to 163,000.
Oh, whoa, doubled.
Yeah.
Wow.
And there were only six other states that had worse hunger than us. So,
oh,
like,
my gosh.
Oregon and Idaho were better off than we were.
Wow.
We were kind of insulated during this period of time. I'll definitely post this article so people can read it. And then the article, it was written in 2012, and it said also that hunger in Washington state was above the national average, and the national numbers are 14.9% for food insecurity and 5.7% for just hunger.
Mm.
And that was 2012 again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and then the Department of Health said that from 2014 to 2016, about 12% of Washington residents were food insecure. 5% had very low food security, which was called food insecure with hunger.
Okay.
At a different point.
Yeah.
And the national average from 2014 to 2016 was 13% compared to our 12.
Oh, so we did bring it down a bit.
We brought it down a little, but we were still
5%.
Yeah. Which is the same as the national average for that time.
Yeah.
Also, fun factoid, can you guess, according to the internet?
Yes.
This was from...
Which isn't always reliable.
AwesomeAmerica.com.
You did not get it from AwesomeAmerica.com.
Fact, I did. Yeah.
Sweet.
Okay. So, where was the world's first soft serve ice cream machine located?
Oh, my gosh.
It was in a Dairy Queen, but what city in Washington?
Oh, what city in Washington?
Yeah. Yeah. World's first soft serve ice cream machine.
I'm trying to think of like a tiny town. I'm going to say Aberdeen.
You're closer than I thought.
Really?
I mean, you're like, you know, an hour and a half away.
Oh, what is it?
Olympia.
No kidding.
That's what the internet said.
What?
Yeah.
Olympia?
Yeah, that's what it said.
Well, congratulations, Olympia.
Look at you, little Olympia, the engine that could. And then this is a fun little fact about Washington that I found while I was trying to do research for hunger. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to throw that out there before I get back to the real hunger stuff.
Sure.
It is illegal to shoot Bigfoot in Skamania County, Washington.
Oh, well, I mean, that goes without saying.
Yeah.
He's an endangered species.
He is, yeah.
He might not even be real.
His family, yeah. So, according to one account, the law was put into the books at the height of the Bigfoot craze, not to protect the mythical creature, but to protect citizens from overly enthusiastic, weapon-toting, paranormal enthusiasts flocking to the area. But in Texas, hunting Bigfoot is completely legal on private land as long as you have the landowner's consent. So,
I'm glad we've taken the time.
Yes, that was what I got.
To craft a law.
Yeah.
That makes it illegal to shoot a fictitious animal.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, so that I found that stat while searching for hunger information.
Can't solve the hunger issue,
yeah.
But we got that one unlocked. Yeah.
And then according to Back on Track, Feeding America, $448 million or more it costs to feed Washington state people and their food needs.
You mean for the taxpayer?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the average cost of a meal in Washington is $3.01.
I'd like to see the place where that's real. $3.01. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they've done these. Northwest Harvest has done these a few times.
Like 67 cents feeds a family of three.
Yeah. Where they've done these things where they tell you, here's like $3. Go to the store and make your family an entire meal. Right. And they've had like famous chefs do it. Right.
Yeah.
Where they come and they say, you know, they're trying to showcase like, here are these chefs that deal with, you know, $100 ingredients and they put it and they make a meal out of it. Like, and they were like, here's $3, go do it.
Good luck.
These chefs had to like make a meal out of what a struggling family has to make a meal out of. Mm-hmm. And it was really cool. There was a whole like, you know, they talked to the chefs about how hard it was to find something that wasn't processed or this or that.
Yeah.
It was really interesting. That statistic about how much it costs taxpayers to help with that is really something. I feel like we're sometimes, I mean, that's an acceptable, like it's unacceptable that it's that high.
Yeah.
It's something that I think folks who are like us, who are taxpayers, we're willing to accept
having
to pay that money.
What are you going to do? Let people starve?
Right.
Yeah.
But it's an unacceptable number.
It is.
It's pretty unbelievable.
So maybe there should be change somewhere.
I don't know. Sounds like Sri John got it right. So we'll just let him do the talking for us. we're not intending to be divisive on the podcast, especially around Thanksgiving. You know, sometimes these sort of things have intersection with governance and
it's kind of hard not to have a topic that doesn't intersect with anything else.
Right.
Yeah.
So we do encourage folks especially during this holiday season. When you're really thinking about it, and it's okay to me to become aware of need around the holiday season. At least you became aware of it.
Yeah,
it's
totally
fine. Don't feel bad because now all of a sudden you wanna give to charity. Mm-hmm. It's totally fine. Whatever compels folks to take a look around, see the need in their community, and try and answer that need, that's fantastic.
Yes.
Volunteer at your local food bank. Give to places like the Hunger Intervention Program. You know, do anything you can to
get
folks.
There's food bank barrels at your local grocery store.
Yeah. Chances are those of you who may be state employees are listening to this and you have been at your office.
Yeah.
You know, just bring something in. I think it's just a really good time to do that right now. It's a really nice time because we become really interconnected with each other.
Yeah, and you can just add something simple to your grocery list. Yeah. Just pick up a few things.
Yeah. It's very cool.
Yeah.
It's a very cool time. So hopefully this podcast helps folks, you know, kind of find that. But we really want to thank Sri John for coming on. It was a really interesting conversation. We have a couple upcoming events. We are in the fourth quarter, if you will, we're in the last couple weeks of this campaign.
Yeah.
We're almost done. Home stretch, people.
The fourth quarter of the campaign.
Home stretch. We do still have a few things, though. Right now, until Friday, when the actual game happens, we are having our Apple Cup Challenge for those who are Husky or Cougar fans. The game this year is set to be a pretty exciting one, and so we kind of piggybacked on that and are running a challenge right now where folks can either give to the University of Washington Foundation through their paycheck or the Washington State University Foundation through their paycheck, help support scholarship programs and even food pantries on their campuses.
Yeah, yeah.
You get a little swag with it. You'll get this fun little Real Cougs Give or Real Dogs Give e-card. You can share that with your friends. Going on right now, all the way through December 11th, is a very cool one called Stuff the Ruck. This is done by a few DSHS employees and former veterans who are supporting Toys for Tots and the Puget Sound Honor Flight. They're going to have Toys for Tots bins all over different state offices in Olympia, and then they do this really neat thing where they stuff actual Army rucksacks,
mm-hmm.
and they have a whole race up the switchbacks by the Washington State Capitol. And then you can also give through your paycheck if you want to support them monetarily. And you can pick either the Toys for Tots or the Puget Sound Honor Flight. And then you can also select which branch of service you're doing in the honor of, which is also really neat.
Who won last year? Was it the Army?
Last year was the Marines.
Was it the Marines?
Yes, because this year is Army's Revenge. Is what it's
oh,
called.
My.
Yes.
My.
Yes. So we have a few more of those. And then, of course, there'll also be something on something very special on Giving Tuesday that is in the works right now.
Yeah.
So we really want to thank everybody for listening to the podcast. We really appreciate you taking the time. And around this holiday season, we hope you have a good time on Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.